There are thousands of stories waiting to be told. Some that have never been heard before. And so, I'm here to tell those stories. Stories to thrill, to sadden, to excite, and to educate and annoy. I am your storyteller, so let's get on with the story, shall we? This week we have Unsolved Mysteries. Some of these stories may not be for the weak of heart, so this might not be the show for you. But if you're into mysteries, by all means, stick around for a while. Unless you're kidnapped or something. Did Nora Quarinin walk out into a dense Malaysian jungle alone in the middle of the night, or was she abducted? By Apple Rhubarb Crumble. Some background. Nora Quarinin was a 15-year-old Irish-French girl who was in London with her parents, Meba and Sebastian Quarinin, and her siblings, Inez, age 12, Maurice, age 8. Nora was born with hydroprosencephaly, which is a brain disorder that left her with mental and physical handicaps. Her parents reported that Nora had mental age of about 5 or 6, had poor motor skills, and needed help to walk. The disappearance. On Saturday, the 3rd of August 2019, Nora and her family arrived at the Dusan Resort near Birimbun Forest Reserve in Malaysia for a 2-week holiday. Nora went to bed in an upstairs bedroom shared with her brother and sister. Very next morning, the family woke to find Nora missing and a downstairs window open. Unidentified fingerprints were later discovered on the doorframe. There was tension between the family and police very early on, as police treated her like someone who had wandered off and become lost in the forest, whereas the family were insistent that she could not have left the building alone. So she must have been abducted. Her parents described her as someone who would not venture out into her own garden without her family member holding her hand. Sebastian Quarinin said there was 1 in a billion chance that Nora had wandered off by herself, and Nora's mother said that it would have been impossible physically, mentally, to imagine that she could have gotten any distance at all. Nevertheless, a team of up to 350 searchers consisted of Special Forces police, firefighters, commando, forestry workers, and civil defense teams, alongside volunteers and local tribes, scoured the local area for any trace of her. Searchers played a recording of Nora's mother calling for her during the searches in hope that she would likely respond. 9 days after Nora went missing, her unclothed body was found next to a stream about 2.5 kilometers from the resort. It was estimated that she had been dead for 2 or 3 days before her body was found. Witnesses said she was in plain sight and looked like she was sleeping with her head resting on her hands. The post-mortem results ruled that the teen had died from internal bleeding in her intestine after her stomach ulcer had burst. Following a period of prolonged hunger and stress, and noted that there were no signs of assault on the body. Controversy. A coroner eventually ruled her death to be caused by misadventure, but her family continued to insist that Nora could not have gone to that area without help. Her mother said in an interview, "One of the most compelling things that we found was that in relatively small area, the plantation where Nora was eventually found, there was a vast number of specialist personnel deployed to find Nora. Not only that, on 4 different occasions, trained personnel went to the plantation area and searched it. And in fact, some officers even went in the precise location that Nora's body was recovered. They had all reported that there were no signs of human life at any point. That, for us, is compelling evidence to say that she was not there by herself." A member of the Malaysian search team said Nora couldn't have gotten there by herself. "I struggled to walk. The path was difficult, even for an able-bodied person. Dense vegetation snags your feet, and the average gradient of the slopes where Nora was found ranged from 20% to 40%. You have to cross 2 reasonably deep streams to reach the area where she was found. The terrain by the stream is very slippery. The roots and rocks are wet. The boots were destroyed by the end, and Nora was barefoot. I can't imagine how she could have walked to the place where she was found." The Mysterious Fire That Killed the Parents of Joan Rice by Dan Peist. While the disappearance of Joan Rice is a well-known mystery, I just learned from the Dark Curiosities video entitled "The Disappearance of Joan Rice" that Joan was orphaned in a mysterious fire on the night of February 23rd, 1939. Joan Rice was born Joan Bard on May 12, 1932, Harold and Josephine Bard. The 1939 count. The February 23, 1939 Lancaster New Era newspaper contained a brief article entitled "Two Die in Fire," describing the death of Joan Rice's parents. The article said that 2 persons had died in a fire that had caused $25,000 worth of damage. The victims were Harold S. Bard, age 42, World War I veteran, and his wife, Josephine Bard, age 38. The fire chief said that the cause of death was suffocation. The fire chief also said that Harold was found with a telephone in his hand and Josephine was sitting in the chair in the living room. No cause of the fire was determined, at least at the time the article was published. The 1963 account. The February 24, 1963 Boston Globe newspaper contained an article entitled "Fire Killed Joan's Parents 24 Years Ago Last Week." The information in the article largely comes from Arthur C. Hamilton, who was a member of the Mountain Lakes Call Fire Department from 1919 to 1939. The article states that Hamilton had resigned from the fire department shortly before the Bards were killed, but that he had spoken to many of the people who had fought the fire. Hamilton said that Joan wasn't home the night of the fire, but was staying with relatives. The article said that Harold was found lying on the living room floor with telephone in his hand. Josephine was found a few feet away on a chair. Both died from smoke inhalation. Neither was burned, though. Hamilton then says, "One of the most unusual things about the fire was the dog they found. The Bards had a huge German police dog, and he used to bark whenever someone went near the apartment. But after the smoke had cleared and the firemen were poking through the ruins, they found the dog wrapped up in a blanket in the basement. It appears that someone had put him to sleep before the fire started." The article said that the dog had been strangely silent that night. What's a case that led you down a rabbit hole into different subcultures? By Levy Mevy. The disappearance of Halea Cummings. Unlike the saga of Kaylee Anthony, the now famous toddler who disappeared a prior year in Orlando to Halea's case, didn't receive a massive national media attention. Unlike Kaylee, Halea was not born into a comfortable middle-class suburbia, but rather reportedly drug-infested trailer park deep in the heart of a culture that many Americans still don't know existed. Poverty, ignorance, lack of job opportunities, and multi-generational drug use combined to make certain pockets of Central and North Florida almost like a scene out of the movie Deliverance. These are not towns you take your family to on an annual vacation, like Disney World, nor are they stops on college kids' spring break tours. These are little outposts you might speed by on the Florida Turnpike, and that's about it. If you did need to venture into these areas for any reason, you would likely be regarded as something of an outsider. Best to just fill up with gas and move on. But Halea didn't have that choice. Halea Cummings was born to Ronald Cummings and Crystal Sheffield. Crystal later moved to a different part of Florida, and Halea was living with 25-year-old Ronald and his then 17-year-old girlfriend, Misty Croslin, in Satsuma Mobile Home in February 2009. Ronald was at work the night Halea vanished. According to Misty, whose story changed multiple times, Halea was asleep in the trailer and then she was gone. Basically, Misty's original story is that sometime after 3 a.m., Misty awoke and discovered Halea was gone. No signs of forced entry except, according to Misty, a brick had been used to prop open one of the doors to the trailer. Ronald arrived home to find Halea gone, and both Misty and Ronald called 911. Background on Misty Croslin. Croslin's father said his daughter was difficult to raise, much more so than her brothers. She stopped going to school in about sixth grade and could not read or write when Halea went missing, according to her father. Others described Crosland as a devoid of emotion, likely from some traumatic life experiences. Crosland told authorities she suffered from sexual abuse. She told the judge that she was pregnant as a young girl when she was 15. Crosland purchased a bus ticket under an assumed name and ran away to New Jersey. Thanks to a social worker, she was found and returned back to Florida. Background on Ronald Cummings, Halea's dad. Born to addict parents, raised by grandparents / other relatives, little education, a lot of drugs, and violent background, and of course, jail. Background on Crystal Sheffield, Halea's mom. This case was a real culture shock for me. It's tragic. Generation upon generation of addiction, poverty, violence, and instability. It's unbelievable the amount of poverty that exists in some places in the U.S., a third world country in a Gucci belt. Not only are the three main adults addicts and survivors of childhood PTSD, but also is the extended family Halea grew up in chaos, who was consistently looking out for this child. Not one of them were sober. On top of that, Halea's dad is now serving a 15-year sentence for drug dealing, and Misty is serving a 25-year sentence for drug dealing. Like, holy crap, get locked up for that long over being nonviolent? Don't get me wrong, they shouldn't be doing that, but man, imagine for a second that Misty Crosland is innocent. This girl has a 6th grade education, is extremely unstable, and had an extremely unstable childhood, was a survivor of sexual abuse, and as a result, she turns to drugs. Can you blame her? It's just insane. Researching this case really opened my eyes to what generation upon generation of poverty does to people. How childhood instability and violence impacts people for life. How harsh drug sentencing laws are in this country. Just so much in one case. How does throwing people in jail for 1 to 2 decades solve poverty or lack of education or the instability? It literally makes things worse. And this really isn't a defense of any of the adults in this case, but just me expressing my shock at learning about how Florida's swampland has this subculture.
Misaki Ogura, a young Japanese girl missing since September 2019, by Inglorious DMK. Hello everyone, this is my first write-up. I live in Japan and was following this incident in the news last year. It breaks my heart that this poor little girl has never been found, and I want to help get out more information about her in English. On September 21st, 2019, 7-year-old Misaki Ogura vanished from a campsite in Yamanashi Prefecture, Japan. Despite extensive searches by Japanese self-defense forces and local volunteers, no trace of her has been found. She was born on May 8th, 2012, to Tomoko Ogura, and at the time of her disappearance, she was 7 years old and in the first grade. She lived in Chibi Prefecture with her parents and older sister. She was looking forward to her school sports day, where she'd been selected to take part of a relay race. She told her mother proudly, "I'll definitely win first place." She likes animals, insects, and singing. She's a little shy, but friendly with people she knows. On September 21st, 2019, she, her sister, and her mother joined a group of seven families at Tsubasuko Campground in Yamanashi Prefecture, about a three-hour drive from their home in Chibi. This admittedly is quite a drive, but Yamanashi is a prime spot for camping in this area. It's very mountainous. Mount Fuji is partially located there, and home to a lot of untouched woodland. Additionally, if some members of the group were from Tokyo and Yokohama, the campground is significantly closer, less than 2 hours' drive. In any case, the group was planning on staying overnight, so the drive was probably worth it. Their father was not with them due to work. He intended to drive the following day. Misaki was last seen at the camp around 3:40 p.m. The children had just finished their snacks and run off to play, and Misaki had taken longer to eat and run after the group after a few minutes. Her mother says she watched Misaki run and turn a corner after the other children, and that's the last she saw of her. When some adults went to pick up their children around 4 p.m., they realized Misaki wasn't there. After searching the area, they called authorities. Over 1,700 police, firefighters, and JSDF members combed the area over 16 days. In addition to many volunteers, they searched the campsite, the woods, nearby rivers and streams, and the local dam. Not a trace of Misaki was found, and they eventually had to call off the search. Two volunteers went missing during the search, but were found safely. Misaki's mother, Tomoko, had been tirelessly searching for her daughter, making numerous TV appearances, giving scores of interviews, and handing out leaflets in the area Misaki went missing. She also runs several social media accounts and websites dedicated to finding her daughter. Despite this, she has been on the receiving end of very harsh slander and gotten numerous threats online. A man was arrested in August for sending Tomoko death threats, such as, "I know you're the culprit. Hurry up and turn yourself in. I'm going to kill you." People have also made calls to her workplace and even driven by her house and harassed her older daughter. Misaki's father has made some statements to the press, but his name has never been officially reported as far as I can find, and hasn't made any public appearances. Theories. Misaki got lost in the woods and succumbed to the elements. This seems, sadly, like the most likely scenario. Even with the extensive searches, the woods are still the woods, and it's certainly possible that searchers just didn't find the body. The fact that even a full-grown adult went missing during the searches lends a lot of weight to this theory. Still, one can't help but to think something would have been found by now. Additionally, the time between her disappearance and when she was found missing is less than half an hour, and how far could she have wandered off in that time? Theory 2. Someone kidnapped her from the campground. With such a large gathering of people, that may have not all known each other, it would have been easy for a stranger to slip in and out. Misaki, lagging behind the other children, presented a perfect opportunity for someone to lure her off. And since she may not have known all the adults in the group, she likely would have assumed the stranger was part of the outing. The remote location also means that there would have been little in the way of surveillance footage to track an unknown vehicle. Theory 3. Misaki's parents did something to her. Since we only have her mother's word about it, some people suspect that Tomoko and or her husband killed Misaki and disposed of the body. There's even speculation that Misaki was never at the camp at all, since no participants at the camp have taken to social media to confirm the events as reported. People have even gone as far as to the point that Tomoko cut and colored her hair and put on makeup for the interviews as looking suspicious. I find this theory very shaky and probably rooted in deep-seated misogyny. For one thing, the police surely interviewed other members of the camp. If no one had seen Misaki at all, I think the information would have come out. Her sister also would have likely said something, as 10-year-olds are not the greatest secret keepers. The hair stuff is just stupid nonsense. Is she supposed to be a disheveled wreck forever? The only thing that nods toward this theory that I do find strange is Misaki's father has been suspiciously absent from TV and newspaper interviews. It seems strange that he wouldn't be with his wife searching for his daughter. But I'm sure if it means anything other than that, he's got his priorities mixed up. Many online speculate that he's hiding his identity to avoid trouble at work. Misaki was approximately 125 centimeters tall and wearing a black long-sleeve shirt and blue jeans at the time of her disappearance. She has dark brown eyes, black hair, and a distinctive mole above her upper lip.
That'll wrap up this episode. I hope you liked it. There's always more stories that I can always tell. But, as always, have a good day, night, or, of course, be wary of those strangers lurking around. Otherwise, you might be an unsolved case yourself.